Okay, this week's parash is Vayechi, and with Vayechi we get to the end of Sefer Bereshit. It's my bar mitzvah, Sedra, correct. It's my birthday, and one of my sons. Last Saturday night, Shabbos was over, at least 5 minutes, I said, you see, my parents forgot. I said to Ellie, and 2 minutes later, like 10 seconds later, the phone rings. So they all started laughing. And Naomi says, why are you waiting for them to call? You should call your mother and say thank you to her.
She should call me.
She should call you. Everyone's a church. Okay. Okay. Yaakov dies, and in source number one, we're told about the funeral arrangements. Vayisu oto banav aritza kinaan, vikbru oto b'ma'ara stei hamachpela shekana Avraham et asadeh lachuzat kever, ve'et Ephron hachiti al pnei mamre. So we're told that his children take him to the land of Canaan, and they bury him in the cave by Machpela, which Avram had bought to be a burial place from Ephron the Chiti, which was by Mamre. So that's all that the Torah says about this. And then we find we'll start with the Targum Yonatan, where it has a wonderful interpolation put into the text, telling us a whole story that took place in the middle of this pasuk, and we'll spend all of today on this story. Vayisu oto banav la'artza shel Kanaan, which is quite similar. Unishma hadavar la'Esav harasha. And Esav heard about the funeral. Miher, sicha, vayisa maher shel gvula b'chilot gdolim. He traveled quickly with a great deal of soldiers. Vayavo l'chevron v'lo haya ozev li'Yosef l'kvorit aviv. Which reminds us a little bit about when Yaakov wants to come back the first time, Esav comes with a great deal of soldiers to stop him from coming into Israel, generally. And now that Yaakov's going to be buried in the Marat HaMachpelah, he comes again with a great deal of soldiers to stop the funeral from taking place.
He comes
before they bury him? Yes. After all the lines which are underlined there, you look at the very end, V'achareichen kivru. So it's this is right there in between, right when they get there. Esav arrives with his soldiers. He would not allow Yosef, which itself is a very interesting image, because Yosef is theoretically somebody who's quite important and quite powerful. I mean, he seems to have a whole entourage with him, whether he takes all of his soldiers with him. But here we have a conflict. We have Esav with his soldiers coming and confronting Yosef and the entourage. Miyad halach Naftali v'yaratz v'yared l'mitzrayim. Naftali goes and runs to Egypt. V'yavo b'ahu o b'oto hayom. He goes, runs back and forth. V'yavi shtar mecher shakatav Esav l'Yaakov achiv al chelko b'marat ha-machpelah. So he runs quickly and he brings back the deed. The deed apparently is part of the whole sale of the firstborn. It includes who will be buried in Marat HaMachpelah, who receives the right for this. So he goes back, brings back the deed.
Can you just translate what Esav was doing?
He brought his soldiers to stop the funeral.
Stop
the funeral from being buried in the Marat HaMachpelah. What he's worried about is, who will be buried in Marat HaMachpelah? Will it be Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, or will it be Avram, Yitzhak, and Esav? So Esav, who has backed down at previous times, at this point is no longer backing down. Yaakov is dead. There's nobody there to stop him. And he says, no, this is my funeral place. This is my... I own this, not Yaakov. What? Not by so much. Pay attention. It has a good ending. No, Keter Yonatan is the Hebrew translation of the Targum Yonatan. The Targum Yonatan is very different from the Targum Onkelos. Uncle is very rarely will you have any types of interpolations like this. Very rarely will he put midrash into the text. Unkelus tries to be as literal as possible. On the other hand, Targum Yonatan, which, by the way, if you really want to speak accurately, Targum Yonatan is not really Targum Yonatan. It's they write it, if you look in any scholarly places, they describe it as pseudo-Yonatan or pseudo-Jonathan. The reason is that there's a very famous Targum called Targum Yonatan. And when they published this particular Targum, they called it Targum Yonatan. We have every reason to believe that it's not Targum Yonatan. It's most likely a Targum Yerushalmi. So therefore, the Rosh Yeteva were the same. Tuf Yud. So therefore, but the Targum Yonatan on the Navi apparently is the authoritative Targum Yonatan ben Uziel. This is one of many Targumei Eretz Yisrael, Targum Yerushalmi. The Aramaic is an Eretz Yisrael Aramaic. There were different dialects of Aramaic between Bavel and between Eretz Yisrael. Anybody who learns the Talmud Yerushalmi versus the Talmud Bavli will see that the Aramaic in the Yerushalmi is far more difficult, or we're not used to it, but it is a different dialect. Over here, this Targum Yonatan, which is really a Targum Yerushalmi, has a very similar dialect to the Talmud Yerushalmi. Now, what he does is it's a fascinating Targum because he puts all kinds of interesting things in. What I have at home is a book called the Keter Yonatan, which you can buy in your bookstores, and it's a Chumash with Rashi, Targum Yonatan in Aramaic, and on the bottom, a translation called Keter Yonatan, which of course I'm sure is a wonderful joke for real Talmidei Chachamim. Look at this. There's the Chumash translated into Aramaic, and then the Aramaic translated back into Hebrew. But what you end up with, as you see over here, is some... No. Not even trying. Not try. And that's why it's fascinating. Not even close. No, of course not. But that's why it's funny, because then you read the pasuk and you read the Keter. As I said, you can buy this at home. On the latest or the last two versions of the Bar Ilan disc, they included the Targum Yonatan and the Keter Yonatan on the disc. It's Keter Yonatan.
Is this a fairly well-known midrash, or is this the only place in the
Hebrew? Oh, it's fairly well-known.
So he's commenting on a known midrash. He's not bringing different sources.
Right. I mean, there's sometimes we find things in the Targum Yonatan that you can't easily find in other places. This particular example is one which is quite well known. So, Naphtali runs to Egypt to get the documents. Exactly. First of all, this is a little foreshadowing as far as the brachot. Not foreshadowing, it's actually back. It's the brachot that Yaakov gave him. He calls Naphtali.
I'm fast. I guess I'm fast.
He's very fast. By the way, how old do you think Naphtali is at this point? Okay. Yeah. No. Yeah. Yaakov dies 147, right? He dies. And he has his first child, as far as we can tell, at 63. So, and I think all the kids are born within an 8-year or 10-year span. So, he's not young. Anyway. Yeah, one of the other sources that mentions this medrash actually puts in right there the phrase, Naphtali Ayelech Shulcha, that he is a swift deer, I guess it is. He's very swift, and therefore he's the one who runs back and forth in one day, no problem whatsoever.
Egypt
from Hebron. Egypt from Hebron.
Pretty far.
Well, I think today's the marathon in Tveria, so it's quite appropriate to be. Yeah. Do you remember your grandson who had a bris on the day of the marathon? We couldn't get up. Gamliel had his bris on that day. We got stuck in the trap.
We made the bris.
We made the traffic. We tried to hit runners. I know you were there already. You were there when she gave birth. It does make a difference. We won't tell them about the runners that you almost hit when you were driving. Right?
He
almost hit an 8 homer when he was jogging. So he's prime minister because of her.
That's a lot.
take full responsibility. Okay. Let's continue. Miyad Ramaz L'Chushim Ben Dan. Somebody gave a signal to Chushim, the son of Dan. V'yikach cherev, and he takes out a sword, v'yikta rosho shel Esav harasha, and he removes the head, he decapitates Esav. V'haya rosho shel Esav mitgalgel, and Esav's head starts to roll. Ad shebalatoch ha-ma'ara, until it rolls into the cave, v'yaniach b'cheiko shel Yitzchak Aviv. And it ends up in the bosom of Yitzchak, his father, v'gufo kivro banav shel Esav b'sadeh ha-machpelah. And his body was buried outside in the field. V'acharechen kivru oto banav li'Yakov. And then it continues with the translation of the pasuk, and then they continued with the funeral. So over here, in the midst of the funeral, we do have a great deal of excitement. We have a little bit of a delay. We have Esav arriving, Esav taking his, I guess, last stand. We have one of the sons, Naphtali, running all the way to Egypt, bringing it. And when we have Chushim and Dan, we're told over here, Ramazlo. Somebody makes him, gives him a sign, and he takes out the sword, takes off the head. The head goes rolling. Head is buried in the Maran HaMachpelah with Yitzchak holding onto Esav's head. This is great, right? And then Esav's body itself is buried outside of the Maran HaMachpelah, but in the field on the outside. And thus ends the Midrash as told by the Targum Yonatan on the Pasuk. Right. No, yeah. I guess. Oh, you mean why is Yitzchak still there? Last year I gave a class about dead people. And there are midrashim about that righteous people don't decompose. But don't calm down. Calm down. So we have what? So on the one hand we have a son of Yaakov who goes running down, and then we have a grandson. The grandson is Chushim. If you look in source number 3, which is from last week, where it gives the lists of the various descendants, it lists and it says Uvnei Dan Chushim, which itself is a funny pasuk. Why? He only has one son. And also, it's one son, and he calls him Uvnei, right? Because all the other ones are Vnei, but the Vnei Dan, you know, there is only Chushim. Plural, right. And Chushim. So it's funny what Chushim may or may not mean. Let's take a look at the way the story is told in the Gemara. This, just, you know, in case you were worried that it was obscure, the Gemara has it. The Gemara is in Masechet Sota, around Daf Yud Gimel. There are many, many, there's like a whole bunch of pages there, which has a lot of Agadah. And over here it's told, Chushim ben Dan, and I'm cutting into the middle because there really is a longer part of the whole story, but I'm just getting to the role of Chushim because we're going to speak about Chushim today mainly. Chushim ben Dan taman hava, Chushim ben Dan was there. V'yakirin le udne, but he had a problem. He was hard of hearing. Now, this we were not told in the previous source, but you remember in the previous verse, what did it say? Ramazlo. So why? Right. How Ramazlo? You know, take that sword or whatever. Ramazlo. But over here, we're given a little bit more information. What are we told? That he's hard of hearing. Ah, so Chushim have to do with Chush, right. So, Amr Lahu, which, by the way, the name is probably where they get, right? Amrle Maihi, he says, Amrlahu, Maihi, he asked them, what's going on? Amrle Kama Akiv Hai Adiyate Naphtali Mi'ara Dimitzrayim. This guy is holding up the funeral until Naphtali gets back. Amrlahu, and he says, Va'ad Da'ati Naphtali Mi'ara Dimitzrayim, till Naftali gets back, Yehi Avi Abba Mutab Bizayon. My grandfather is going to be lying here just waiting for the funeral to take place. It's humiliating. Shakal Kulfa, he takes out his sword. Machya Aresha, he removes his head. And over here it says, Natru Ene, I'm sorry, I mean, she's going to get all excited again now about this. It says his eyes popped out. And Naflan Achari de Yaakov, his eyes popped out and rolled over to Yaakov. And Yaakov then sees this. I know Yaakov's dead, don't tell me. Patchinhu Yaakov la'enei va'achich. Yaakov opens up his eyes and he's amused by this. V'hainu z'chiv yismach tzadik ki chazan nakam. The righteous man will be happy when the vengeance takes place. So anyway, Yaakov is dead. And then it continues and it even tells us, and this is what Rivka was afraid of when she said, why will I mourn for the two of you on one day? So that also seems, and even the Gemara says, no, they didn't both die on the same day, but they're both buried on the same day, and therefore they both be mourned on the same day. And therefore when Rivka said that, it was also a little bit of a foreshadowing of the demise of both her sons will take place together. Now, I don't know if I need to say this or to spell this out. This whole thing is very bizarre. What? Did I need to say that, or are you glad that I agree? There's a little more information. Each time you get to another source, it gets a little bit sharper as far as the picture. Not that it explains everything, not that we have any answers, just the problem gets a little bit sharper. In source number 5, we have the story being told in the Pirkei Derbi Lezer. And it says, again, the whole beginning is the same, that they get to the Maron HaMachpelah, and Esav shows up, and he's there ready for battle. And then it says, right before we start with the underlined, it says, L'kach halach Naftali shehu ayala shlucha. Right, Naftali, who's very quick on his feet, he's the one who goes, Chushim ben Dan haya pagum ba'ozno uvilashono. So here we got a little bit further. Why would that make sense?
Right.
So over here, I mean, the last source in the Gemara says, yeah, he's deaf, but he starts having a whole conversation with them. Is a little strange. If he's deaf, then what kind of conversation is he having? Over here, it's getting like more into character, and it's saying, okay, Chushim is deaf. If Chushim is deaf, that means that Chushim cannot hear, and he also cannot speak. So it says, Hayo pagum ba'ozno uvul shano. Amar lahem, nonetheless, he says, V'bnei ma'anach liyoshvim kam. Right? What? Right. Harehu be'etzbo, they point with the finger to Esav. Amar lo b'shvil ha'mi'ish hazeh, she'inu maniach oto l'kvorot Yaakov. Shalach et chirbo, v'hitiz et rosho shel Esav, v'nichnas harosh l'toch marat ha'machpela, v'tgviyato shalach l'eretz achuzato b'har se'ir. Over here you have a slightly end of Esav's body, his head ends up in marat ha'machpela, but his body is sent back to Har Seir, going back to the Seir type people, and does not end up over here. But over here it does continue and say that Yitzchak then wakes up. Yitzchak has Baruch Shoshe Esav, Hayamet Palel of Nekadosh Baruch Hu, and he starts to pray to God about his beloved son Esav, who is now dead. Now, and I'm stopping there. If you want, you can continue the Midrash. Chushim ben Dan, if you understand that he's deaf, you can get, I don't want to call it an inside joke, but it's, if you don't know that, then you don't get something from last week. Last week where it says, in source 6, Vayigash elav Yehuda, Yehuda goes. You remember Yehuda goes in front of Yosef and he starts getting all upset and he get all angry. And then it says, Miyad ka'as Yehuda v'sha'ag b'kol gadol. And he screams with such a loud voice, V'lach kolo arbama od parsa, and his voice goes at 400 parsa, ad sheshama Chushim ben Dan. Till Chushim heard it. So, it's not just that it all the way reached reached Israel. It was that even a deaf man was able to hear the scream of Yehuda. So, as I said, if you don't know that Chushim is deaf, then you don't understand what that reference is over here. Which is interesting, because the first source we saw would indicate he was hard of hearing. right? Well, the Gemara sounds like he was hard of hearing. Right, the first verse said nothing, and the Gemara said he's hard of hearing, and later on we're finding not only is he's hard of hearing, he's hard of speaking, but he speaks even though he can't speak, he hears even though he can't hear. So the whole thing is really quite interesting, because if he's deaf, then how does he hear? And if he's can't speak, then how does he communicate? So there's something going on over here, which we will try to figure out. Excuse me? And his name is Senses. So his name is Senses, and he has a limit of senses. How many of the senses is he limited is... In the Yalkut Shimoni, we again told of the death of Esav. The only difference over here is in source 7, Yalkut tells us, Achu alach ba lo chushim ben dan v'haya cheresh, which is much clearer. He is deaf. So those of you who are very upset about Esav's eyes falling out, as we're told in the Gemara, over here instead we're told that Esav's ears fall out. And Esav sounds like Mr. Potato Head, right? As, I don't know if you have any better description of it, that somehow the head comes off, but then either the eyes come off or the ears come off. But which is beginning to get interesting, because we have Hushim, who's lacking senses, and then Esav, who ends up losing senses along the way. So there is some kind of a parallel which is being created, which we still have no idea what's going on. And excuse me? His tongue. No. We'll, I'm sorry I mentioned Mr. Potato Head, okay? Do you remember that? Recesses of. Okay. I don't recall that. No, it says that he buries him. I don't recall him dying then. Let's think a little bit. What we find over here is that, first of all, Esav dies. Okay, you can decide if this is good news, this is bad news. Okay, that's your decision. But what's interesting is that we do have a division that takes place between Esav's head and the rest of his body. That Esav's head ends up in the Marat Machpelah, and apparently what this whole Midrash is telling us is that Esav himself would very much like to end up in the Marat Machpelah. He feels that this is where he deserves to be, where he belongs to be. He feels that this is his legacy, that he should be with Avram and Yitzchak. And apparently Yaakov disagrees, apparently God disagrees. But what ends up happening is a pshara, how do you say, a compromise. What's the compromise? Okay, we'll let Esav's head in, but we won't let the rest of it in. Now, why should Esav's head have any right to go in while the rest of him shouldn't go in? Which is really the question that you have to ask over here, and I think it may be a very obvious answer. Or maybe not. Okay, I guess it's not an obvious answer. Okay, first of all, that's interesting. First of all, it's interesting to separate. Let me just comment, and then you'll continue. It's to separate the mind. Now, what are you separating it from?
The mind and the body.
Okay.
What he says and what he does, or between what he
does? That's what I want to hear. That's what I want to hear, the continuation. I want to hear what Charlotte... Okay, good. Finally, we're getting to that. Okay, good. Excellent. Good, excellent. So hold it right there. Which means that we do find that as far as his father is concerned, his father's understanding of Esav is that there is something positive about Esav, but how does it manifest itself? It manifests itself in terms of the words that Esav uses. Which means Esav, what? And in terms of Esav's mouth and what he says to his father, which right then we can ask ourselves a basic question. And when Esav speaks to his father, is he sincere or is he not sincere? Which means, is the failure of Esav a lack of sincerity, and therefore he's just pulling the wool over his father's eyes, or is it an inability to be consistent to follow through with what his mind knows is the right thing, but his body can't follow through with what his mind wants or would imagine himself of doing. But again, it becomes very interesting then that his head ends up in the Maarat HaMachpelah. What can't end up in the Maarat HaMachpelah? Say it better. Say it better. I'm waiting for someone to say this much better. What? Say it. Not mine. Ours. Ours. We share. It's the Yadayim of Esav that can... It's the Yadayim of Esav that can't end up in the Maarat HaMachpelah. But the words of Esav, the mouth of Esav, the head of Esav can end up in the Maarat HaMachpelah, but the Yadayim of Esav, which then represent the sins of Esav, that can't possibly end up inside. And that's the dichotomy, and that's the division, and that's what takes place. Now, what's more interesting, I don't know if it's more interesting, what I find interesting is that who is the one who helps Esav get separated between somebody who has no Kol Yaakov and only uses what? Yadayim of Esav, which means Hushim is acting very Esav-like by using the sword and taking Esav's head off, and now we're told that he can't speak, but if he can't speak, then how does he represent the continuation of the Kol Yaakov? Do you understand what I'm saying? That becomes, for me, a very interesting part. Let's just look at a couple of sources. Source 8, Tzayid Bepiv, Rashi's telling us that now Rashi's putting it as a cynical point, is that he hunts with his mouth. Rashi writes, Katerma Bepiv Shal Yitzchak, Midrasho, Bepiv Shal Esav, Shal Yitzadoto Umamar B'dvarav, that he fooled his father with his words, which is spelled out in the Bereshit Rabbah, which I suspect all of you have heard. Omer V'yavahu Shadani Tzaydani, Tzad B'bayit, Tzad B'sadeh. He did this both in the house and in the field. B'bayit, hech mitaknin milcha. How do you take ma'aser, or how do you fix salt? Right? Do you have to take ma'aser from salt? B'sadeh, hech mitaknin tivna. How do you fix tevin, or straw? Which means, does salt and does straw, does it need to take ma'aser? Which means he's talking to his father in very religious terms. He's talking to, and again, I'm going to ask you, is he mocking or is he sincere? Is there a part of him that means it? This source, the way that Rashi is using it, and the way that the Midrash is stating it, there's no question that it's saying is that it's he is fooling his father. But again, we have to ask ourselves, is he fooling his father because that's what he wants to do, or is he fooling his father because that's the result? Because he would like his body to fall in line with where his mind is, but he just doesn't seem to be able to succeed. Well, no, the question is he mocking, or is he being ultra religious?
Can't tie salt, it's obvious that you can't
tie salt. Well, maybe it wasn't obvious.
It was obvious anyway.
If Christianity was the outcome of Esav,
and they do tithe, and they
I think absolutely.
Correct. Good. Let's look at them. Yes. Let's look at source number 10, which is the Maharal, explaining that Gemara in Sota that we saw earlier, which talked about Esav getting separated from his head. The man who lost his head. I guess this would be Esav. None of you have that book? Don't tell me it's back with Mr. Potato Head. In the box in the attic. V'yesh lecha ledat, or maybe he's writing to women, V'yesh lach ledat, ki ra'oi le'esav she'e neherag b'yad chushim ben dan, dafka. It's appropriate that Esav gets killed by chushim. Shehu acharon shebishvatim, bishvatim, he is the last of all of the tribes. Now, we don't know yet why exactly Chushim is being described as the last of the tribes. Very good. Because if you look at the formation, in the desert, who's first? Yehuda is first. Dan is last. So therefore, therefore, he's saying that it's appropriate that the last of the tribes, which is Dan, Hushim ben Dan, that he's the one who kills him. If you want to see that for a second, source 12, V'nasa degel machaneh b'nei Dan ma'asef l'kol ha-machanot. They're the ones at the very, very end. Rashi then gives an explanation what exactly ma'asef b'kol ha-machanot means. But they're at the very end of it. Who's first? Source 14. V'yesu b'rishona al pi Hashem b'yad Moshe v'yisa degel machaneh b'nei Yehuda b'rishona. Who's going to be first? And who in Yehuda will be first? Nachshon ben Aminadav. Nachshon is the one who's first always. Right? Nachshon is the one who jumps in. Nachshon is first. Yehuda is first. Dan is last. And therefore, in a sense, you have Dan and Yehuda as polar opposites, north and south. And he tells us that it is therefore appropriate that it's Hushim from Dan who kills him. And then he mentions something interesting. Uvimidrash Sochatov, which I didn't bother bringing. I think I had it once and I erased it. Yesh ki Yehuda hargo. There it says it wasn't Hushim that kills Esav. Esav still dies, but it's Yehuda who takes him out. Now, why would it be appropriate for Yehuda to be the one to kill him? Because Yehuda's the guy who has anger issues that we saw last week. Yehuda's the one who's going to be king. Yehuda's the leader. Yehuda's strong. Gur Aryeh, right? Miterif ben Elita. He's the one who has the ability to rip him apart. Yehuda hargova lav nemar yadcha ba'oref aivecha. Your hands is at the neck of your enemy, which is also the bracha of Yehuda in this week's parasha. So there are, meaning the different midrashim agree that Esav gets killed by either Yaakov's son or grandson. Question is, who is he killed by? Is it by Yehuda or by Dan? Even though we've seen all these midrashim that tell us it's Dan, we do have another midrash that says, no, it's Yehuda, and that's what it means that he grabs the neck of his enemy. K'moshe v'rashi zah b'perash achumash. Klal hadavar ki hariga hazot ra'ui l'rosh ha-shvatim o l'acharon ha-shvatim. The one thing that I see clearly, he says, that it either has to be the beginning or the end. But again, he's at this point of polar opposites, which will be an important theme as we continue. V'zeki Yaakov v'esav naldu b'beten achad. And that's because Yaakov and Esav, they were twins. V'im kol zeh he mitnagdim hafachim. And nonetheless, they are polar opposites. Aval mitzad atzman nimtzim b'yachad, d'haynu mitzad hanigle. Nonetheless, in terms of what's revealed, there is something that unites them. When it comes to what's hidden inside, when things look similar on the outside, then you need to look on the inside. You have to probe on the inside to find the difference. And what he's claiming over here is that there's far more similarity between Yaakov and Esav on the outside than we would feel comfortable with. But ultimately, the difference lies within something which is deep, something which is inside. And he's using Zera over here as a metaphor of something which is inside. And therefore, it is the children of Yaakov. As you pointed out before, it's when you look at the descendants and look at the different directions the descendants go, then you'll end up realizing what was really different on the inside between the two different brothers. Let's continue. Ladat misha ama Hushim ben Dan, and according to the opinion that it's Hushim ben Dan who kills him, ki hayahu ha'achron, for hu mashlim shivim nefesh. He's the very last one, which is not only is Dan the last one in terms of the formation of the tribes, when you get to the number 70 of the people that left Egypt, you have a little bit of a problem getting up to 70. Because if you count, how many do you have? You have 66. If you add the three in Egypt, you have 69, and you're still missing one. Look at source 11, just for a sec, but keep your finger where we're up to there. In source 11, the Medrash tells us, Kol ha-nefesh ha-ba'a, uv'nei Yosef she-yolad lo, Rabbi Levi b'shem Yishmu bar-Nachman, ra'itim yamecha adam notin l'chaveru shishim v'shesh, kosot v'chuzer v'noton l'af shlosha, v'hum moneh otam shivim? Have you ever seen somebody give somebody 66, add another three, and say, okay, I gave you 70? He goes, well, I guess there are certain places that you... I say there are certain places that you can shop and you can get this done easily. You'll be lucky if you get 69. And then he adds in a couple of different answers to this of how you get to 70. I guess the sexist feminine approach was Yocheved. right? There are those who say, V'humanotam shiv'im elozu yocheved sh'lemunyan shil Yisrael b'mitzrayim, and then there's the V'yesh Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu shlem, count God, like always in gematrias, you off by one, you add another one, right? There's one God, so therefore you always get to add one more. But then the last opinion over here that you never heard of till today, I presume, it says, V'yesh Amar Chushim ben Dan hishlemi manotam inyan. The very last of the 70 was Chushim ben Dan. So that's what the Maharal is referring to over here. No, I believe he's not. I tell you the truth, I did not go back and count. Give Jeremy something to do on Shabbos, let him go and count in the moment. I'm sure if you tell him this, he will anyway, so let him count. So he says that the 70th, and by the way, who's the first one? Yehuda. How do you know it's Yehuda? I know it's a good guess, but how do you know it's Yehuda? Because Yaakov sends Yehuda first. He sends Yehuda to go and to set up the yeshivot or whatever he was setting up in Egypt. So Yehuda's first and who's last? Chushim ben Dan is last. So therefore, once we're back to our idea of polar opposites, so therefore it's appropriate that it's Chushim, meaning it's either the first, it's Yehuda, or it's Chushim ben Dan, who is the last, because it's not even Dan. It's a descendant of Dan, and that is number 70. Let's continue. And he says, "Ruoi hayila hashlim otam gam kin seleket lochem negdam, v'lo midrash am Yehuda regom neshahu melech lochem b'mitnagdim k'mo kol melech l'kach ruoi lo davar ze b'frat u'lefichach amar Yehuda hargo." So again, it's either number one, it's number 70, it's either the top or the bottom, and he has this theme over here of opposites. Let's skip a little bit. U'v'midrash haniskar amar Yehuda hargo me'acharav shel Esav. The midrash that says that he killed him, it says that he killed Esav from behind. Right? Which is something that we didn't see by Chushim. It says he kills him from behind. Why from behind? V'lama hargo me'acharav, lo milafanav. Right? Doesn't he want to see the whites of his eyes before, what?
Before he rolled them.
V'lama hargo me'acharav, lo milafanav, v'nei shahaya klaster panav shel Esav, domer liyakov. That Esav looked just like Yaakov. Yeah. He looked just like Yaakov. He could not kill him by looking at his face, because he looked too much. And again, we never like to look at it this way. We know Yaakov is this and Esav is this. They don't look anything alike. And over here you have the Maharal going into a whole, analysis based on the fact that they are far more similar than you ever think. And they get to be old men, 147. The difference is they both lost their hair at this point, right? It's not that they don't look as dissimilar as we would like, or the opposite. He can't even look him in the face and kill him. He has to kill him from behind. And then he continues and he says, Yaakov, Al-Dover Zahayu Shnei HaSeirim B'Yom HaKippurim Shavim. And this is the reason why in Yom Kippur, when we have the two Seirim, why they have to look alike. Because it goes back to the symbol of Yaakov and Esav, Achad LaHashem, V'Achad LaAzazel. And there's a lot more to talk about this. And that's why it says, Lechna elatzon v'kach misham shnei gidei izim tovim. And that's why Yitzchak tells him, bring me two these izim. And v'omer tovim lecha v'tovim levenecha, harei lecha ki Yaakov Esav shavim. Yaakov and Esav are equal. V'dvar ze gam kin ru'oi sheyu shavim sheyeh kvurat shneihim b'yom echad dafka. And therefore it's appropriate that the two of them get buried on the same day. V'yesh lecha v'inet d'dvar ze ma'od. And he says, you need to understand this very well. Well, either you do or you don't. The Maharal is a very mathematical thinker. And the Maharal likes system. And the Maharal likes order. And the Maharal took from everything that we've just now seen, and he tried to make order out of it. Of course, the order that he arrived at is one of similar on the outside, polar opposites in reality. And he set up for us a lot, but we need to go a little bit further. When we think about Yehuda and Dan, there is another element that unites them. There is something else that they have in common, something which they do together. What?
I don't know. Tell me, y'all remember.
Source 14? No, we did that already. Source 16. V'yedaber Hashem Moshe le'mor, re'ei karati b'shem Betzalel ben Uri ben Chur l'matei Yehuda. V'leit ruach elokim b'chach b'tuv v'nedat, and so on. L'chashov machshavot l'asot b'zav kesef v'nechoshet, and so on. V'ani hinei natati ito et Eliha, Ahaliav ben Achasimach l'matedan, which means that the Mishkan is the result of these two tribes coming together. Which again, as far as the Maharal is concerned, here are your polar opposites. The polar opposites of Yehuda and Dan, first and last, again, in terms of the formation, first and last in terms of going down into Egypt, they're the two candidates to get rid of Esav.
They're also Aryeh and Gur Aryeh.
Excellent. They're also both called Aryeh. One is called Aryeh in Bereshit by Yaakov. The other is, Dan is called Aryeh by Moshe later on in Zot HaBracha. So there is more similarity to them than we perhaps would have thought. And it's these together that end up creating for us the Mishkan. I don't know. Let's look at source 18, the Kli Yakar. But it has to be from him. I mean, he has to be from Chushim. You get that, right? If he only has one son, then you know he's a descendant of Chushim, right? Can't bypass Chushim and be a descendant of Dan. Source 18. Lefi sheYaakov barach me'Esav. Why does he run away from Esav? Source 18, Kli Yakar. Why does he run away? Because Esav wants to kill him. How is Esav going to kill him? I guess the way that Esav kills people, with the cherev. He wants to run. He runs away. Where does Yaakov end up when he runs away? Lefi sheYaakov barach me'Esav moraya alo el rosho shelo yifkaeu becherev, and he's afraid. The fear comes on him that he won't, on his head, which is interesting, that he won't be struck by a sword. Okay. Right, lose his head. Alkein min hashamayim yakvuhu litpalel b'makom shitpalu avotav. So where does he stop? He stops by this place that his parents are. Ki hamikdash beit tefilah yikareh. Because the mikdash is a place of prayer. Which means he's afraid of the yadayim of Esav, and therefore he now uses the kol Yaakov. V'kfar hutna shekol zman sheyaakov mitzavtzef b'kolo ein yidei Esav sholetet bo. And whenever Yaakov uses his kol for tefillah, the hands of Esav will not be able to harm him. Ba'od shebeit hamikdash hefcho shel Esav. And the idea of Beit HaMikdash, which is a place of peace and a place of connecting to God, is the opposite, again, keep in mind, the opposite, is the, if you want polar opposite, is the opposite of what Esav is. Ki Esav amunato lo tosh cherev nachoshetu barzel lasot mimeni cherev. Because he uses all of those raw materials in order to make weapons. Uvemikdash k'tiv kol kli barzel lo nishma k'tiv lo tanif aleihim barzel al kein haru li Yaakov makom hamikdash lomer shebizchutot yinatzel mikli barzel k'mashikatov yinochi imcha ushmarticha b'kol asher telech. That means that the eventual Beit HaMikdash would become this place of peace. Again, it's artisans building, but not making weapons. It's using the creativity to make a place for God, and that is what Yehuda together, or Bezalel together, with the tribe of Dan, Yehuda and Dan together, are able to create. And therefore this becomes, the making of the Mishkan, making of the Mikdash, is this thing which fights against Esav. So once again, we now realize why particularly within these tribes is this capability. Now, let's go a little bit further. Because there are sources that do want to come back and talk about Esav's head. And saying, again, is there only cynicism there, or is there something else? Likutei Torah, which goes back to the writings of the Arizal, source 19, Hine Esav haya nitzutzei k'tusha. I think that should be Degvura. Shelo gnuzot bipiv. His greatness is stuck in his mouth. Besod kitzayid bipiv. V'lochen kishat chatach chushim rosho, Dalag harosh lema'arav v'nikaber im Yitzchak ki haketusha hayta barosho. That he's saying, no, there really is ketusha in Esav, but it's stuck in his head, and it does not come out in any other place. There's ketusha in his head, and that's why it deserves to be in the Marat HaMachpelah, and that's why it deserves to be together with Yitzchak, and that's what Yitzchak always saw. Yitzchak was able to see the ketusha of Esav, which is stuck in his head, but never really gets out of his head. Ki haketusha hayta barosho levad, l'chein nikaber sham uviyato b'makom zeh haya mitga'eh, l'kach amar im tegbiya kinesher, u'mehaketusha hu, from this ketusha who came out, yotzugerim roshei Yisrael, the roshei, the leaders of Israel, come out, shmayim v'avtayin, Rabbi Meir v'Rabbi Akiva. He goes, these are all these people that end up coming from Esav, because these are people that come from Gerim, that come from Rome, and therefore these are people who Yitzchak sees, and Yitzchak sees this incredible Kedusha, but with Esav, it's only stuck in its head, and it's not able to get out, and therefore it's rightfully his head. Again, what the Arizal is concerned with is how can the head of Esav end up in the Maariv HaMakpelah if it shouldn't be there? It can't. It can't end up there. No, his body can't be there, but his head can be there. Because within the head there is Kedusha, it's just there's something blocking it, and it can't actually come out. In source 20 in the Koma Vaser, Ukamosh Yagid, Arav HaKadosh, Rabbi Bunim, Biprishischa, Al Esav, Shehoya Mishamer et Libo, Shelo Tekanes Bo Shum He'erame HaSeichel Shebarosho, that he guarded that his heart would not be affected by his mind. He caused there to be a separation, which, by the way, there is a Hasidic vort, a modern Hasidic vort. Hasidim were a garto. I think I've told this once. Why do they wear a garto? A garto is to separate between the forces of sexuality and between the heart, which means that instinct shouldn't control. A person should be able to make good decisions. So a chassid goes to his rebbe and says, should I wear a tie? So he says, no, a businessman needs to wear a tie, because he needs to wear a garto between his head and between his heart. Right? That's what a tie is. But that's exactly what he says over here. He says that Esav wore a tie. Esav was able to separate between his mind and his heart, and he caused there to be that his heart would not be impacted by the Kedusha of his head. Therefore, he goes after his Yetzer, he goes after the forces, and the whole lower part of his body is going on instinct, and his mind is not able to affect him in a proper way. That's the way that Rabbi Bunim explains it. V'yesh lomar shelakein nami nifrad rosho mi libo, shirosho munach b'marat ha-machpelah, reisho de'esav v'atvei de'yitzchak. And that's why it's separated, and that's why his head can end up in the Marat HaMachpelah, and the rest of him cannot. I'm just skipping a little bit. Then later on, we find something. She'esav ha-yelo b'mocho nishamot gedolot. He's obviously quoting the Arizal. In his mind is where all of these great nishamot are. V'yashomer et libo shelot avo bo shum he'era. And he guarded himself that he would not be affected by this Kedusha, which is there in his head. He created the separation, and therefore his head ends up in a good place. I don't know. Why? Why he would do this? I don't know. We have all of the these.
Don't look at any university that has academic students. They separate their mind and their head. No, there's a separation between
them. It means that his inclinations were evil, and he fought against it, but he didn't succeed.
In source 24, the Sfat Emet writes, Vevshar ki Esav atzmo nami hayimaher b'tshuva, that his thought really was, I need to do better, I need to do tshuva, which doesn't fit into the whole scene over there by the Maariv HaMakpelah, af lo hayachol lehotzi mekoach el hapoel, but he wasn't able to take it from its potential to actuality. L'chein kosav chazal ki rosho shel Esav munach Maariv HaMakpelah. Again, that's why his head ends up in the Maariv HaMakpelah, shelo hayilo lo ratzon l'shamayim v'zeh pa'al Yitzchak b'machshevato af maseh lo yatzarich liot kein. And again, this is what Yitzchak sees, this is what Yitzchak wants, but the potential remains as potential and doesn't come into actuality, at least regarding him. Again?
Christianity always talks of love.
Right.
But on the other hand, because of this love, they always
became. Right. They killed, it sounds like Charles Manson. They killed us because out of act of love, yeah. Let's see how much we skipped. Okay, let's go towards the end then. In source 25, we have the bracha that Shevet Dan is given. Dan yadin amo ki achad shiftei Yisrael. Dan, again, Chushan comes from Dan. Dan will judge people. So Dan is midat hadin. Dan will judge, kechad shiftei Yisrael, like one of the judges of Israel. Yehidat Dan nachash alei derech. Now you're correct when you pointed out that Dan is going to be called a lion by Moshe, but Yaakov identifies nachash. Ki Dan nachash alei derech, shififon alei orach, hanoshech ikvesus, v'yiporach vo'achor, who bites the feet of the horse and causes the rider to fall backwards, lushimotcha kivit Hashem. And at that point, Yaakov suddenly says God brings salvation, which I think I discussed once, seems to be this call for, he wants Mashiach to come already. It's not clear if this is a response to what he just now said, or is an introduction to the next part. As I said, the commentaries go both ways on this, but it sounds, and it looks to me, like this is Yaakov responding to this particular issue. Now, what does this remind you of? The Nachash and the Derech biting at the heels of the rider. Yeah, doesn't that seem to remind you of this? Excellent. Excellent. Look at source 26. Vayomer Hashem Elokim el hanachash, ki asita zot arur ata mikol habehima mikol chayot hasadeh agachon chatelech v'afar tuchelko yimechecha ve'eva ashit bencha uvein ha'isha uvein zarcho ben azara hu yishpoch rosh v'ata tishupenu akev. Right? I will put enmity between you and your woman, and between your seed and her seed. It shall bruise your head and shall bruise his heel. And the akev over here, of course, on some levels related back to Yaakov. But over here we're talking about Dan. Now, look at source 27, the Eitz Hadat Tov. Isn't that interesting? That's the name of the book. Okay? Chatach Hushim ben Dan et Rosho Esav, Nafal al Berkei Yaakov, Az Nitkeim Yismach Tzadik Chazen Nakam, v'chule. V'nyan ki Rosho Shel Esav hayu sham nishamot ha-ketushot, v'lachein Rosho Shel Esav nichvata v'nikvara sham im Yaakov, Az Nitkeim hu yishvoch rosh. Right? Goes back to the verse about the serpent, right? He will bruise your head, which is the head of Esav, which now gets bruised and put together with Yaakov. V'nechushim ben Dan, hu begematria nachash. You'll note that chushim is spelt without a vav, and it equals nachash. Gam badan aviv ne'amar yehidan nachash. V'chule k'nizka b'sef ezor, ki hu ha-nachash ahur ha-elyon ha-chakuk b'kisei Shlomo midat hadin ha-sholetet ala nachashim ha-tmeim. That means that there is a positive power of nachash, which fights against the forces of evil. To fight against evil, you need its own type. You have to go out on their terms and counter it. But by the way, if you're talking about polar opposites, now you have a nachash fighting a nachash. You have a Nachash using the sword. You have a son or grandson of Yaakov using the sword, who's called Nachash, who's connected to the Nachash, who's fighting against the Nachash. And he says, and all of this is coming from Kedusha. And he goes, this is the power of the Nachashim fighting against the Nachashim as well, which we find later on in the Chumash. But by the way, in medical terms, this is what's called a vaccination. Mm-hmm. Right? This is what a vaccination is. So at least here you have a theological basis for a vaccination. The Shloha HaKadosh in source 28. V'chein b'minyan b'nei Yisrael n'ramaz inyan Mashiach, kasher timtza b'bnei Dan chushim, u'parshat v'yikash kashiv u'bnei Dan chashim, Chushim, the vav is not there. Umatzati shekatav Arizal ki chaser ktiv shehu otiyot Mashiach, which is interesting because Mashiach and Nachash, of course, is the same numerical value. Now Shabtai Tzvi used this in order to do every single sin imaginable. He said that Mashiach, that everyone else sins and it's really bad, and he says, but if Mashiach does sins, then he's able to somehow pick up all of the sins and turn the sins into kedusha. That's a little warped. Over here, what the Shla is telling us is that Chushim is Nachash because he's from Dan. This is the Otiyot of Mashiach. That means that the process that we're describing over here is a process or an apocalyptic process where we need to counter the forces of the side of evil, which is this positive Nachash against the negative Nachash. And that's why Chushim ben Dan, who's called the Nachash, is able not to have the Kol Yaakov, is able to have the Yad of Esav, but what he's able to accomplish with that is to remove the forces of Esav from the world, but not just remove the forces of Esav, to separate, to do what's called in Hasidic writings a birur, right? To do a clarification, and to separate the negativity of Esav from the Kedusha of Esav, and sent, which is ultimately what the Messianic Age is about, is that you get rid of the negativity and you unearth the Kedusha, and then you send the Kedusha of Esav back where it belongs, back with Yitzchak and back to the Meretz Machpelah. But at the same time, what you're doing is that you get rid of all the negativity. But the way that you're doing that is by using the Yad of Esav, but you're using it in a positive way, and that is this positive nachash against the negative nachash, and that is the whole idea behind taking these shots, right? The flu shots, they give you a little bit of the flu, right? In order to get rid of the flu. This is the idea. Again, I don't know if they have vaccinations at this point.
It's more of similar, and that you take something that can poison you in such a small degree, and that'll make you better, and probably homeopathy is less similar.
Okay. So again, what we see that is interesting is that Chushim Ben Dan is somebody who comes from Midat Hadin, but ultimate Midat Hadin is there in order to unearth the Kedusha, to separate the sin from the Kedusha, send the sin back where it belongs, but send the Kedusha back where it belongs. And this is ultimately the same thing as the Nachash, and this is ultimately what the role of Mashiach is. And all of that is encapsulated in this bizarre midrash of Chushim Ben Dan meeting Esav and cutting off his head and sending his head to Yitzchak and sending his body back to Seir. It doesn't make sense on a whole other level also. And that is that we're told generally that it's Bnei Yosef who defeat Esav. That's what we're told generally. So we're Bnei Rachel who defeat Esav. So where are they? And I'm saying, your question is even stronger, and I don't have a good answer to it, and I completely avoided it for that reason. Correct. Have a good Shabbat, ladies.